Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. And with me in the studio once again, psychology professor Dr. Carrie Clements and Mandy Hooverus with Domestic Violence Shelter and Services. We're talking about violence between intimate partners. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Mandy, before we went to break, you were telling us about a program in the high schools that you have that educates teenagers about what's a healthy relationship, what's a not-so-healthy relationship. Can you just give us some of the highlights of that? What is a sign of a healthy relationship for a teen?
So I think certainly respecting each other's boundaries. And, you know, when we start to see people feeling entitled to control all aspects of the person they're with, that becomes a problem. And in an age where we have constant access to technology and cell phones at hand and all of these things, we're noticing some shifts there that young people today think that it's normal for their partner to be entitled to go through their phone, to be able to have access to their email passwords and things like that. So it's really just starting there, listening to the kids, listening to where they are, and helping them know, like, that's not okay. You're able to set boundaries. You're able to have trust and respect and love in a relationship without fear.
Right. You can have private email that is just yours, and it doesn't mean that you don't trust your boyfriend or
right.
your girlfriend.
Right.
So healthy boundaries. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what are some signs then, conversely, of an unhealthy relationship?
So, like, isolating you from your friends, from your support group, extreme jealousy, control, don't wear this, wear that. All of those are things that when we start to hear that, some red flags go up. And we do some great activities where even we'll show, read a scenario or show a video clip, sometimes even a Disney movie. Like, and that seems silly, but some of our animated Disney movies, Beauty and the Beast and classics like that we grew up loving, if we actually step back and look at them and the message they send about relationships, it's kind of alarming, you know, love this guy even though he's a monster. And then maybe if you stay with him long enough and prove yourself, mm-hmm. he turns into a prince. Mm-hmm. And so even like breaking it down for the kids on that level can be really revelatory.
That is interesting. I'm not sure that's the message that I took from those archetypes, but I can see how that message would come across. Well, speaking about culture, Eminem is in the news, the rapper, because he recently, I'm not sure if it was in a circumstance where he was freestyle rapping, but he talked about hitting a singer, Lana Del Rey, twice like Ray Rice, and he referenced the elevator in this rap, and it was pretty ugly. One person said, I'm not sure why the misogyny in Eminem's lyrics never bothers me. I think it's because I recognize it as a legitimate artistic expression. Like, much of the function of art is to allow us to express and explore complicated subjects and emotions and experience some sort of catharsis. What do you say to that, Dr. Clements?
Oh, that really, really disturbs me. And, you know, especially when I know that young people are listening to these lyrics and they're identifying with them, and that legitimizes behavior on their part. But I've got to say that, you know, I really feel that we live in a culture where violence against women is okay, and that women are afraid sometimes to even go to their families because they'll be blamed. It gets back to the comment earlier. What are they doing wrong? You know, why can't they make this right? Why can't they change things? You know, he'd be a better person if you only just fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And you know, I am such a powerful advocate of looking at things like Eminem and calling him out and having him take responsibility for people who are likely to identify with and act on that. It makes me just sick to see people in popular culture glamorize domestic violence
so,
in that way.
So this is not a legitimate artistic exploration to you. To you, this is some sort of glamorizing, as you say.
Or abusive behavior in and of itself. I mean, he's essentially saying it's okay, right? It's fine. You know, you can do this.
But then as a society, you know, if we buy those records uh-huh. and we listen to that, then we're validating that and saying, you know what, it's not that bad. And so that's where we start to have to really turn that mirror back and look at ourselves as a society and say, what are we willing to accept and what are we not?
That is a great question. Anonymous sent an email saying, thank you, Mandy. Yes, the question is, why does the abuser do what he or she does? I will say, though, as a survivor of domestic violence, the reason I stayed as long as I did was I came to believe that my husband came to believe. Mm-hmm. I think that's key here because that implies a progression. She didn't start out this way. Came to believe that my husband was right about me, that there was something wrong with me, and he was frustrated by my dysfunction. He even said at one point that he felt I wanted to kill myself but lacked the courage, so I was pushing him into killing me. We even went to a marriage counselor who was so charmed by my husband's charisma that she told me I needed counseling, but he didn't. I would probably not have survived if three different women hadn't taken me aside in the 2 weeks before I walked out. They all three independently said to me they were afraid for me. One had worked for domestic violence at one point, and she said, "You look like one of my clients. Talk to me." Again, here we're talking about all of the responsibility being placed on the victim of domestic violence. But the only way this circumstance will end is if the victim, Dr. Clements, mm-hmm. is able to actually make the decision to leave.
Yeah, and that's classic perpetrator behavior. You know, the reason I'm doing this is that it's your fault, right? You're evoking this from me. And if you would just get your act together, then this situation wouldn't occur. And to the extent that the woman is beaten down enough emotionally, she may buy into that. And that's part of the progression, recognizing that, no, this is not you. This is him.
It sounds almost like a prisoner psychology.
Very much so. Very much that Stockholm syndrome that, you know, mm-hmm. people refer to it.
Yes.
And that's why I keep, you know, hammering at cultural norms, because she may hear this from her family too. She may go to her parents and her parents may say to her, you know what, you got married. It's your job to make this marriage work. And that's the kind of message. That woman was lucky, you know, that three women did that. Obviously, one of them was very well educated in domestic violence, but other women are not so lucky.
And additionally, that woman was incredibly brave.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask often, how can you do this every day? And how aren't you disappointed if someone goes back? So I answer that with saying, I'm blown away every day that someone has the courage to walk into my office, never having met me, and reveal the most private and frightening and intimate details of their life, and trust that I'm there for support. And so it is a process. I think that's important to remember. Leaving a violent situation we think of as an event. You pack your car, you put your things in, you drive off into the sunset. It's a process, and it's a long and complicated one. And additionally, you know, we made the point earlier, when you're leaving is one of the most dangerous times. And that doesn't mean that it's okay to stay or that we want someone to wait. But it means that we need a plan, and that's where our agency comes into play. So Domestic Violence Shelter and Services provides resources and support for victims here in New Hanover County. We are available 24 hours a day by calling 910-343-0703, and there are a whole host of services, emergency shelter being one of them. But many clients we work with maybe aren't in need of shelter. Maybe they're in need of safety planning support and court advocacy. That's a big thing. The court system's complicated and very intimidating. And so we have help to navigate that and explore what options are available.
We have Kelly from Wilmington on the line. Kelly, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. What's your question, Kelly?
My question is, what is the responsibility of women who report domestic violence, and also, is there any culpability when a woman simply claims domestic violence in order to have her boyfriend or husband put in jail? And there's really no basis for that. And let me tell you, I know from personal experience that friends of mine and others have been shanghaied by angry women, and even heard the police say, what you have to do is say that he put his hands on you.
So you're saying there have been women that have been vindictive and vengeful and then coached by police into basically framing an innocent male.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, Kelly. Mandy.
So that's a really, you know, that's a valid concern, caller. And I couldn't, like, I do what I do because we know this is an important issue. And certainly, if someone is misusing the system to draw attention or for ulterior motives. You know, no one would condone that. But what we do know, you know, I served as our court advocate for many years. The criminal justice system is pretty thorough in trying to weed out false reports. And so there's no way to control that, you know, say every single no one has ever misused the system. But day in and day out, the police officers we work with, they have very specific protocols. They know how to contact the right people, the right support systems if there is concerns about domestic violence. And our criminal justice system is really designed to protect the accused until they're proven guilty. And so that's kind of what we see.
Thanks for that. Anne, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I will try to put this in a nutshell. My father choked my mother to death in 1967, and for 20 years he had been abusing her and my brother and me, mostly my mother. And I won't go into all that detail except to say, indeed, everything you said is true, except he had no alcohol problem. And that she had finally gone to court, got an order for him to leave the home. She had to go through that. And 10 minutes before the order went into effect, he choked her to death. Now, the suggestions I make are these observations. The first suggestion is my father was then diagnosed as manic depressive, and he was a classic manic depressive, and he was a gentleman until he went into a mania, and then he would become violent, and you could not deal with him. When they put him on lithium, he completely straightened out, and any time he got off his lithium, which he would occasionally do, he would go into his violent episode again. So I hope you will discuss and think about having a mental health evaluation for bipolar, for manic depression, because it plays a huge role in this inability to control anger. The second thing I'm going to say is this, and it won't be popular. The first step down the slippery slope is when a woman takes a man's last name when she marries him. She is giving up her own identity. She is bonding with him very closely. This begins to make it difficult for her to distinguish herself from him. And the other thing is this. I think every public school should have, as part of the phys ed or health program, self-defense skills taught, particularly for females, because I can tell you this, when a woman knows how to fight back effectively, she's pretty much solved 80% of the problem.
Okay, and you raised some
interesting points
here. Yes, thank you so much for your call. And wow, that's hard to hear sometimes, that kind of violence. And Mandy, you're reacting pretty strongly to that last point about self-defense. That's not really what you want to be teaching women to deal with this,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, so I certainly don't want to invalidate the last caller's experiences and perspective. And what we do, we actually, as part of our empowerment curriculum, we do teach a self-defense course that's available to victims. And so I'm certainly not opposed to people learning to protect themselves.
That's one of the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think it's important as well. You know, the caller raised some really troubling, you know, details about her personal situation. But we don't want to generalize that, you know, anyone with a mental illness or anyone with a substance abuse issue is an abuser. And we also don't want to say that that causes it, because there are plenty of people out there who are alcoholics or maybe mentally ill who don't choose this behavior. So it's kind of – it can be like gasoline on a fire. It can certainly exacerbate the situation and make it more unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that's always the root cause.
And this circumstance too, Dr. Clements, I thought was interesting. She said as soon as she went for the restraining order – or whatever it was, that's when he acted. And this is what you're finding in your research, that the greater the perpetrator sees the loss of control, the more dangerous they become.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a tragic circumstance, and I'm really, really, really sorry for the caller and what she experienced.
Yeah.
I do think that one of the single most important things we can do for young women and for women in these situations is to teach them what the filters are. So, you know, this person is behaving this way. Whatever you're doing, it's not you. And you need to make a plan to keep yourself safe or leave. And that's the most effective thing you can do. And if part of it is learning self-defense, that's great, and whatever other issues you need to do. But you need to figure out what the filters are, whether you're being controlled, whether you're being isolated, whether you're being hit. And if those things are happening, it's time for you to take a look at what you're doing and make some decisions.
And Mandy, yes.
And I love the analogy about the toolbox. That's actually one that I use a lot when I work with clients, because it's very easy to say, well, go get a protective order. A protective order will fix your problem. So as a court advocate for many years, like, I saw protective orders do amazing things. And what they do is they can set some really clear boundaries. But no one action can guarantee safety. And so we listen to a victim, we talk with her about her options, we educate her about the services and support that are available, and help her put together a plan that she feels will increase her safety.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes left in the program. Mandy Hoover is from Domestic Violence Shelter and Services. Final thoughts, if you could get one message out today, what would that be?
Absolutely, that there is hope. So when we think about domestic violence and we see these images and we hear these horrible stories and things that happen, sometimes we shut down. And think that that's just a terrible problem, and I feel sad for those people. There's hope. There's services here in our community. By contacting us at 910-343-0703, we have advocates available 24 hours a day who can listen, offer support, and help make a plan.
Dr. Carrie Clements, UNCW psychology professor, where would you like to see some breakthroughs in research?
I'm not sure about breakthroughs in research. I guess the final message is that I would like the community to embrace this topic as they've embraced breast cancer or anything like that, so we can all talk about it. It's not stigmatized. It's us. It's not them. And then we'll be able to move forward on these fronts.
That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Carrie Clements and Mandy Hooveris. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who called in and emailed your comments. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us next week when we explore the role of the special use permit and how it could be modified. That's next week on Wednesday, November 19th, here on Coastline at noon. HQR News 91.3 FM. Our producer is Ken Campbell, associate producer Lindsay McGrath. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.